Hello everybody. My guest today is Dr. Ford Dyke. Dr. Dyke collaborates globally with high-level performers such as corporate executives, elite athletes, physicians, academicians, first responders, and military personnel. His methodology integrates components of his professorship, 7-year career as a Team USA athlete, and experience as a performance coach for Auburn Wheelchair Basketball and United States Olympic and Paralympic Committee. Dr. Dyke is specialized in optimizing human performance. Dr. Dyke, welcome to the IJK podcast.
Ahmad, thank you so much for having me, man. I really appreciate it and look forward to the conversation.
Likewise, thank you very much for joining me today. First of all, I'd like to understand, for the sake of our listeners as well, how can we define human performance optimization in very simple terms?
Super simple. It's all about the human experience. We all have individual experiences, as well as the collective experience, you know, that you and I are having right now as a host and as a guest. But even bigger than that, 8 billion plus people on this planet, we're all interconnected. So the question is, how do we optimize our experience, whether that is our performance in the respective performance domain that we're in? You know, it could be we're pilots, it could be we are parents. It could also be that we're helping individuals on a global level. So it doesn't matter necessarily what performance realm you're a part of. The fact of the matter is that you are human. How can we elevate the experience? How can we optimize the performance and make sure that we're doing so in a sustainable way such that we're focusing our efforts on a health and wellness perspective as well?
All right. Thanks for that. What are the key factors that actually contribute to human performance optimization? If we were to summarize these factors, can we imagine certain buckets or group of factors that are similar to each other?
Absolutely. And I like to break it down into a 3-part step-by-step process. So for starters, you know, people that are interested in working with me, I always start at foundation, ground level, and that's what I reference as calibrate. So how do we calibrate the ABCs of human? And that would be awareness, breath, concentration. So first and foremost, how do we build awareness of what's happening both inside of our vehicle, our vessel, anatomically and physiologically speaking, as well as outside? What's going on in our environment? And how do those two things interplay? What's the interdependence? What's the relationship? We can do this by way of focusing our attention on a very grounding mechanism, and that would be our respiration cycles. Inhalation, exhalation, so that would be breath. And that conduit helps us to concentrate. Now we can turn our attention and focus on exactly what we're interested in that present moment. So that's calibrate. How do we set the foundation? ABCs, awareness, breath, concentration. Then we take it to elevate. How do we now bring this up to the next level? And that would be referenced by the 5 elements of human. H-U-M-A-N. Hydrate, unplug, move, aspire, nourish. Those are the 5 elements. Those are the core facets of how we then elevate our experience. Drinking half of our body weight in terms of ounces per day of water. You know, we're water-based creatures. Making sure we unplug. Sleeping 7 to 9 hours a night of quality sleep. Move. Ensuring that we have about 150 minutes of physical activity throughout the week. Notice I didn't talk too much about specific training modalities of resistance training or aerobic, anaerobic. Just let's move a little bit more and potentially be a little less physically inactive or sedentary. A would be aspire. How do we set up our aspirations, our inspirations, and our intentions for the day? The first thought of the day when we wake up really dictates the rest of our day. And then lastly, I kind of save the best for last in a way. That's nourish. What type of foods, what type of nutrients are we ingesting? Whether that's supplementation, minerals, vitamins, anything that we're putting into our system, how does that fuel or not fuel our battery? So that's step 2. That's elevate. And then lastly, the 3rd part of the methodology would be sustain. How do we make sure that this is a sustainable way of living the human experience? And that's what I reference as micro, meso, macro. And I alluded to this a little bit in the intro. You know, the choices I make individually, myself, that's micro. That's just me, number 1. Now, how does that affect the choices potentially you make if we're connected? And we are. And that's, you know, then other people in the health and wellness industry or the podcast space etc., starts to grow. And now that's meso. These are the small subsets and sub-cohorts of humans. And then ultimately, how do those affect the grand scale of things, which would be macro? Again, 8.2 billion and change on this planet. That's a lot of micros. And I believe my vision is that once we each individually make a change for the better, we have an effect on the greater whole. And now we have a much better planet, a much better home.
Pretty interesting. Okay, thanks for sharing this. So I understand from what you just said that basically human performance optimization has physical components, emotional components, nutritional components probably, and you mentioned things like sleep as well. So you try to have a holistic overview of optimization. So those parameters do not address only the physical aspect, but also the mental aspect as well, right?
Absolutely.
So, okay. And on that, actually, what role do you think mindset and attitude play in achieving peak performance? Because you could be like, let's take the example of an athlete, right? You could be like the best physically ready athlete. You could have very good conditioning and a very good endurance and a very good training. However, if your mindset is not top-notch, then you're probably only at halfway there, right?
I believe so, Ahmad. And, you know, that's kind of what I mentioned earlier about our aspirations, these first thoughts we have when we wake up in the morning. Ideally, that's a quiet space. That's before we get on the proverbial treadmill and we hit the notifications and calls and emails and all these different spaces and information starts flowing into our brain. We have a minute there to just pause, reflect, see where we're at. It changes every day. And it depends on our energetic state, our physiological state, our dream state helps, you know, craft our future and our past. But really what matters is the present moment. And I think the more we can stay in the present moment, we can win the moment. And what's important now, not tomorrow, not yesterday, but what's important right now for us. And I think that sets up a growth mindset and that helps us approach life in a very positive lens. You know, it helps us to look at failures as not obstacles, but opportunities to really grow and evolve and change for the better. And honestly, man, that's the definition of the human experience. We all go through growth and change and evolution. If it wasn't for people before us, we wouldn't be here. And if it wasn't for us, the next generation wouldn't be there. So that's the idea of making sure it's a sustainable way of living.
Okay, I understand. Now, what role does physical fitness play in optimizing human performance in general? Not only in sports. I'm talking in general. You mentioned that already, but can you provide more details on that?
Sure. Yeah. You know, we're human beings, and the brain is the organ, and the mind is the brain in action, and it sits atop the body, and the body's the vehicle. And if the body, the vehicle, is not in good working order, then the brain starts to suffer, the thoughts start to suffer, and the productivity, creativity, connection points, they all start to degrade. So it's really important for us to make sure that our vehicle, the only vehicle we truly own, you know, it's not this car or motorcycle or bus or airline or aircraft, you know, aircraft or watercraft. This is what we've been given. And I think if we really pay attention to it and take care of it, it'll serve us really well. It's what we use to traverse the world. Now, whether we are able-bodied and or adapted, it doesn't necessarily matter. It's the vehicle that we've been blessed with. And so why not take care of it? You know, I think ironically, we spend more time worrying about things we can replace, like a vehicle or a watercraft or an aircraft. And yet we can't go to a dealership and buy an entire new, you know, Ford. I mean, no pun intended. You can buy Fords as vehicles, but I can't go buy a new Ford. This is what I've been given. So I make sure to invest in that properly to ensure that my return on investment is at its highest.
I understand totally. And this is where things like fitness, nutrition play a big role, right?
100%. I mean, that's at the end of the day, if you can focus on one thing, I think it's important to hydrate, to move, and to nourish yourself properly. Of course, sleep is critical That's why it's there as that second element. But a lot of people miss that first element, hydration. It's so important. And they miss the bookend, the end of nourish. You know, and if those bookends are off, then your sleep is thrown off and you don't want to move as much. You're sedentary. You start to get a little bit depressed, you know, physically inactive, aches and pains occur. So you don't set up your aspirations properly. And the whole loop gets thrown off. And that's the whole notion of being human. You know, we're human beings, so let's be more human.
Absolutely. With regards to nourishing, to the nourishing aspect, do you have a certain diet or do you advise people to follow a particular way of eating, or this isn't it actually? So what matters is just to find your nutrients regardless of what type of diet you have a natural preference to.
That's a great question, Ahmad, and I think it's interesting because when you look at the word diet, the actual definition of the word, it really just means foods that we habitually consume. So foods that we have repeatedly or regularly. And with that being said, the misconception is these diets, these trends that are out, right? Whether it's keto diet or vegetarian, or I only eat carbs at this point, or I'm, you know, only eating cheese and bacon. Like there's so many different forms
carnivore,
of it. Carnivore diets.
One, carnivore,
I mean,
no.
It's just all over the place, right? So I've said the heck with that. I'm not going to advise anything specific. I'm just going to ask that clients pay close attention to when they consume certain food groups or items to pay attention to how they feel. You know, we can look at the research all day long and we can look at the suggested list from registered dietitian and nutritionists all day long. But until somebody puts that in their own body and pays close attention to how they feel, hence that awareness piece, then it's just going to be information. It's just going to be something on a blog post or a website, you know, or a pamphlet. It's really putting it into practice. So what I really like to do is to get people to understand that we have a bunch of different systems in our body, and each of those systems has a homeostatic set point. It's like the temperature in your house. When you change the thermometer, if you put it at 50 degrees or 42 degrees Fahrenheit, whatever it may be, then you're going to have a situation where once that that room temperature changes, thermostat kicks on and the air conditioning adjusts. We have very similar mechanisms, and whether it's temperature or hunger satiation or movement, sedentary rest, we have all of these set points. Diet plays a huge role in that. How we fuel our battery, how we make sure we're giving ourselves the proper nutrients, the vitamins, the minerals, the nutrients, the metals even, to make sure that once we have all of those components, our battery can be charged and we can then traverse our day, our week, our month, our year, our decade, our life.
All right, great. So based on what you said, I understand, listen to your body. That's kind of the
100%,
main advice.
Absolutely.
And don't get stuck up with this or that diet or fad, right?
Your body will never lie to you, man. At the end of the day, it's going to tell you what it needs, what it likes, what it dislikes. It's just the fact that we've become pretty disconnected from our bodies. You know, we live externally. We live through screens and feeds, and we're all out here in this space and time. Really, when we can just go back a little bit more internally and more even in a way back to our ancestral ways of living, you know, and I don't mean go eat berries off a tree and sit by a campfire. No, enjoy the modern luxuries of technology, but tune into what it means to be human. And that's essentially respiration, movement, and making sure that our battery is charged. You know, we have the ability to think and to create and to feel and to connect. So why not tune back into that and see how that then turns into enhanced productivity, enhanced performance, better health, better wellness, and a more sustainable way of living.
For sure, for sure. I would like to ask a little bit more about the respiration aspect.
Sure.
You mentioned that already multiple times. When you mention respiration, do you mean specifically keeping in mind or remember to breathe and or maybe do some breathing exercises, or do you mean something else?
It could be specific exercises, Ahmad, or it could be simply turning your attention onto your respiration cycle. So one of the practices that I incorporate within that letter B, ABC, awareness, breath, concentration, in the breathing units, what I like to do with individuals is to simply have them close their eyes wherever they are, as long as they're not driving or operating some machinery, of course. Ideally, they're in a quiet space, safe space. They can close their eyes, they can tune into their body, and pay close attention to their respiration cycles. So without changing anything, just simply noticing the act of inhalation and the act of exhalation. You know, it happens automatically. We don't have to control our respiration, but it's one feature that we can control. So I can have you say, okay, internally, Ahmad, make sure you inhale to a count of five, exhale to a count of five. Or I can say, hey, Ahmad, let's take a 7-second inhale, pause for 5 seconds, and give me a 10-second exhale. So there's a bunch of different techniques we can incorporate, but really to build awareness through respiration helps us to concentrate. And that's why it's so important to start with calibrate, to get everybody on the same page, to start noticing how important it is. Something as automatic as respiration can be such a valuable tool for us when it comes to building awareness and being able to concentrate on the moment.
All right. That's pretty interesting. This reminds me a little bit of techniques that one might encounter while practicing meditation, right?
Absolutely. Like
Eastern meditation. So, and I guess these techniques are universal and applicable everywhere. And for sure, they can provide a lot of support and help when it comes to feeling better and then enhancing general sense of well-being, right?
Without question, you know, and it's always interesting to me, a lot of individuals, they hear these respiration techniques or practices and they'll say, oh, well, this sounds like, you know, and they label it. And I'm like, wait a minute, to me, it sounds like being human. I mean, we all breathe, right? We all take inhales and we all exhale. In fact, we have to do that. It's the one thing that we have to do. like we don't have to eat clean. We don't have to exercise. I mean, heck, we really don't even have to sleep the requisite 7 to 9 hours. I mean, sleep has become an epidemic. Like, let's talk about that for a second. You know, it will become a pandemic eventually. But the notion of, well, these specific respiration exercises sound like this form of, you know, it's kind of interesting. And I just try to strip those labels away and peel back the onion and get down to the root. And that is, we're human beings. We require respiration. It's something we do automatically, but it's something that we have full control over. And once we understand that, it can help to regulate all of these other systems, whether it's our heart rate, our muscles firing, our focus and concentration, our digestion, our immune system, our stress levels, our sleep and recovery. I mean, it's intimately connected. Hence why, again, it is the foundation. It is calibrate before we elevate and before we can get to that sustain.
Okay. That's very interesting. Thanks for sharing all these different insights. And I have so many questions that are coming up. One of them is linked to sleep. You mentioned the importance of sleep. However, these days, with the prevalence of screens and smartphones and notifications, sleep is being disrupted all the time, right? People tend to sleep late, and before they sleep, the last thing they do is checking their phones.
That's right.
Do you think this has impacted? I mean, so we know that there's a negative impact for sure, but how big is that impact, do you think? And what are some tips that you can provide our audience when it comes to sleep hygiene?
I mean, how big is the impact, to answer the question of how do we quantify that? I don't know. I mean, I know it's a massive impact, you know, from a safety standpoint, from a health standpoint, just from longevity as a whole. I mean, look at the pharmaceutical industry when it comes to sleep aids. That's a multi-billion dollar industry. That was with a B, by the way. And I don't think that should be the case, you know, because the follow-up question of what are some tools and techniques to help with our sleep hygiene, it's pretty straightforward. You know, if you think about the way in which we've existed on this planet, only in a small period of time, I'd say the last 100 to 150 years, has modern technology changed the way in which we interface with the world. You know, these bright lights I have on right now and the Wi-Fi spinning in my house and Bluetooth connectivity in the studio and all these different, and, you know, these watches and all these, you know, items that I have that my brain is interfacing and interacting with, evolution hasn't caught up to that. My frontal lobe hasn't evolved to that because I'm only about the fourth or so generation give or take, that has been interfacing with this type of technology, this level of technology. I mean, hell, it's really just about 2.5 to 3 generations. But in fact, if you go back 5, 10, 12,000 years, those humans didn't have this type of technology, didn't have this type of interaction. And I'm pretty confident, now don't shoot the messenger, but I'm pretty confident they were sleeping pretty soundly. You know, they didn't have the notifications blasting them in the middle of the night. They didn't have the blue light coming off of screens. They didn't have to worry about city lights blasting them, you know, before they go to bed, and all these different things that have an effect on our cortisol and our melatonin levels, when cortisol should be dropping as the sun sets and melatonin should be rising. And then it's flipped in the morning, melatonin drops and cortisol rises with the sunrise. We've got all of that backwards now because of the modern comforts. You know, of course, this is developed nations and global north nations, but really it's globally, it's worldwide. A lot of individuals on our planet have access to cell phones. And that alone, those smartphone devices are emitting so many blue light frequencies that it's disrupting how we go to sleep, how we prepare ourselves for sleep. So environment, number one, is huge, but also the awareness and the intentionality of making sure, you know what? I use technology, of course, but I have time points that I set all of my devices to flight mode. Hey, when the sun sets, I'm done. I'm not going to be in front of a screen. If I am, it's a projector on the wall, which is not an LCD screen. I'm not looking at devices, whether it's mobile devices or tablets or computers. That allows my system to slowly start to transition into recovery mode. And maybe I need a little bit of movement, maybe some stretching or deep breathing or a sauna or a steam or a contrast shower, just to set the tone for the remainder of the night to make sure that I've got my requisite 7 to 9, typically 8 to 9 is my sweet spot. So I wake up feeling refreshed because I know I have a day ahead of me full of productivity, assignments, roles, and responsibilities. And I want to show up and make sure that this experience is the best experience that I have as a human.
For sure, for sure. So absolutely, what you're saying makes a lot of sense. Lights and electronics and you know, flipping those cycles, or they call it the sleep cycle, or the biological
biological clock, right? Circadian, exactly. Rhythm, sleep wake. Yep, there's many different names for it.
Yes, exactly. So all these disruptors are for sure negatively impacting sleep in general. But if we handle this aspect, the light control, let's say, and are there like other tips for people who have difficulty falling asleep, even if they turn off the light, you know, a few hours before? Are there like any tips that we can action or like implement in our daily routine that can maybe make the process of falling asleep easier, and also minimizing the number of times we wake up? I mean, some people sleep, but they wake up a few hours later and then they have a hard time falling back asleep.
Right.
So do you have any like quick tips that we can share with our audience regarding these particular instances?
Absolutely. And you know, the way that I approach recovery or sleep specifically is a topic of what we're speaking of right now. I approach sleep tonight. Let's bookmark the episode on April 20th, 2024. I approach tomorrow, April 21st, as tonight's sleep, because that's really the start of April 21st, is how I sleep on April 20th. You see what I mean by that? So my next day is really predicted by my night of sleep. So throughout the day, I'm thinking about, okay, how do I set myself up, you know, for the most success when it comes to my recovery? Now, people may be thinking, oh, this guy is kind of like a robot. You know, he just doesn't live his life. He's always thinking about these. It's natural for me. You know, it's something I've been doing for a long time, and I've got the education and experience in this. But for somebody just getting into this, it's about, you know, starting with the awareness. Okay, how am I approaching my nightly routine? How much screen time do I have throughout the day? And am I always under fluorescent bulbs, or do I have the opportunity to get outside? That's a great way to set up circadian rhythm. The planet has its own rhythm, and if you can align yourself with that, then you're going to be in better alignment for a recovery state. And if you're having difficulty getting to sleep, maybe, like I said, do a little bit of movement, just some light stretching to calm the body down. The mind starts to follow. get into sleep. Make sure that, of course, your lights are low, both in intensity and direction. You know, candles are great, salt lamps, low light, literally physically low on like a desktop or a, you know, bedside table. But also making sure that there's no screens in your room. Keep your mobile device outside of your room. Make sure you don't have any televisions inside of your room. That's a big thing. People love to have a big old flat screen in front of their TV, in front of their bed, you know, and I'm like, whoa, that seems like a lot. Or, you know, mobile devices and tablets and all these different pieces of technology, but also making sure your room is cool. You know, the optimal degree
temperature-wise plays a role.
Absolutely, yep. Plays a role. You know, we get a little bit warm throughout the night as our metabolic cycle changes and we're in these different sleep phases. So making sure that the room is comfortable, and whatever that means to you. In general, somewhere in the 64 to 72 degree Fahrenheit window is most optimal. That's a range, of course, and it may be adjusted for some people. Quiet is always great for the mind, but there will be a counter argument. You know, some people I know that live in New York City, they'll say, I can't sleep without the noise of the city. Well, that's because the brain has become habituated to that. So, you know, maybe a sleep machine or a sound machine may help them with that. So just various factors, you know, and if you do get up in the middle of the night to use the restroom or you just toss and turn, make sure you don't reach for the mobile device. If it is in your room, if it's next to you, keep away from the screens as much as you can. Try to practice what's called box breathing. That would be a 4-second inhale, 4-second pause, 4-second exhale, 4-second pause again before you start that cycle. Before you know it, Ahmad, you'll probably fall back asleep and not even wonder, you know, realize that you fell back asleep, which is nice. Making sure that you're hydrated before you go to bed. You know, we sleep 7 to 9 hours. It puts us into a dehydrated state, but there's a balance there too. We don't want to make sure that we're overhydrated, so we're constantly getting up and having to urinate. That would obviously keep us up, and we wouldn't want to do that. So there's a balance, and that's kind of the real key to all of this, is making sure that we have awareness and we're able to now concentrate our efforts on these five elements, but also have some balance. You know, we don't want to spend all of our attentional resources on making sure that we stay hydrated and nothing else matters, or we get 7 to 9 hours and nothing else matters. We're moving 150 minutes a week and nothing else, you know, so on and so forth. There's a balancing act to it. And the more we get accustomed to what it feels like to perform at a high level, we'll understand exactly what those balance and what that those balance points and what that equilibrium really feels like. Again, the body never lies to you. We're really smart creatures. We're pretty evolved and highly adapted. And it just is a matter of giving ourselves some time, you know, from being a human being, a Homo sapiens sapiens. Allow yourself that time to adjust, and you'll start to see the positive benefits of those decisions being made.
Well, thank you for all these tips. Pretty useful. Can you provide examples of techniques or strategies for optimizing physical and or cognitive performance?
Yeah, we have to move more. I mean, that we have to move. That's the fulcrum pillar right there. Number three, the M, we got to move. I think a lot of us as modern humans, we're pretty sedentary, you know, as a species. And that is typically a byproduct of occupations or lifestyle choices or, you know, roles and responsibilities. So if anyone could do anything throughout their day, it's sit less, move more, you know, and whether that is getting up in the morning and walking 10 minutes or getting outside for 10 minutes and moving. And then during their lunch break, same thing, 10 minutes of movement. And then before their supper or dinner or their last meal, move a little bit before and or after. So you've got about 30 minutes of just movement. You know, we don't have to assign any meaning to it. Again, I'm not necessarily talking about resistance training and sets and repetitions and different weights and all these different modalities of training. I'm just saying, hey, let's move a little bit more. You know, we're physically inactive, and that causes havoc. That wreaks havoc on our system. The number one variable in chronic disease is lack of movement, is physical inactivity and sedentary behavior. It's one of the biggest core morbidity features of whether we are going to have a sustainable life or not. And so if we can do anything, I just really want to encourage your audience, move more, sit less. You know, it's ironic because here we are on this show right now, and we're both seated, you know, we're giving information, having a conversation, but in an amazing world, we'd be able to do this in a walking type of conversation or a movement-based conversation. And you know, it's just so much better for our system. It allows our blood to flow. It allows our respiration to recirculate oxygenation throughout the bloodstream. It allows thoughts to be cleaner and more precise and concise. It's just so beneficial for the entire system to move more and sit less.
All right, all right. When you mention moving, I know you didn't previously, you said we're not going to talk about resistance or aerobic exercise or whatever, but does this moving component vary with your level of fitness, your age, where you are in life right now, or there are like certain rules that can be applicable to anybody and everybody when it comes to the moving component?
Yeah, great question. So I really want to emphasize the power of walking. You know, walking is one of our best forms of medicine. And I'm just asking people to walk consistently for 10 minutes, three times a day, you know, 30 minutes. I mean, come on, 10 minutes. People can't break down 10 minutes just to walk, whether that's in their neighborhood or a nearby park or even in a cityscape. Just go for a stroll. You know, just literally go for a walk and try that two to three times a day, and you will accrue your 125, 150 minutes throughout the week of physical activity. You know, I'm not saying you need to join a CrossFit gym or start training for the Paralympics or anything like that. No, like, let's just start walking. Let's just start there, see how we feel.
With the basics.
With the basics, Ahmad, exactly. And then we can go from there. We can start to maybe incorporate other modalities of quote fitness and quote training into the story. But until we have the foundation and the baseline down, you know, why are we doing back squats and hacks and goblets and push press? Like, why are we really worried about that if we don't have our foundation down?
Yeah. Ford, I heard you have repeated multiple times outside or outdoors. Why are you emphasizing to do that movement outside? Is it like because it's better, or is there like any additional benefits that you would get if you would walk 10 minutes outside versus walking inside your apartment?
Yeah, thanks for picking that up, Ahmad. So in my PhD, my focus was on outdoor environments specifically. And we looked at green spaces, so something like a forest or a park or a nature ecology preserve, something like that, that elicits a certain response in the brain. And we also looked at blue spaces. So whether that was a river, a lake, a stream, a pond, or even walking on the coastal line, like a beach as an example. And we compared that to urban spaces. So having people go through something like a Miami or a New York or a Chicago or an LA or a Houston, Dallas, something like that. And we saw big differences in overall experience, but also more importantly, the restoration of the attention system. So in our brains, we have in the prefrontal cortex, which is the neocortex, it's the newest area of the brain, we have certain systems that allow us to focus our attention. They're essentially resources, or they're sets of resources that allow us to place attention on one thing and focus on another thing and move throughout our day. But the more we use that attentional pie, so to speak, it starts to become consumed. And that would be related to directed attention fatigue. So the longer we have this conversation, right? I'm your guest, you're the host, we're relaying and conveying information back and forth. We are using our attentional resources, whether we're aware of it or not. And even your audience, ideally listening to the conversation, they're consuming their attentional resources. So what I showed during my dissertation work was when we take people, we deplete their attentional resources and we place them in urban, green, and blue, we see stronger relationships in green and especially in blue when it comes to restoring those attentional systems compared to urban space. And you can kind of think why urban space is only pulling more of those directed attention resources versus green and blue helps to restore that based on the environment. So that's why I really like to suggest and encourage people to get outside as much as possible.
That's very interesting. And thanks for sharing all these findings that you are finding throughout your research work. So thank you. So what I understand from what you just said is that walking outside, especially in a green setting or let's say park or forest, has the potential to restore, you know, my brain capacity better and faster than versus walking, in a busy street in the city, right?
That's right.
That's what you're saying.
Yes, sir.
Wow. This is something really, really that I didn't know about. I mean, I thought just walking is just walking, whether it's inside my apartment or on the street or in a forest. But now that you're mentioning that, I'm going to make sure to always walk in a green space.
Yeah, definitely. And also think about the footwear that you have on, right? Modern humans were very disconnected from the planet, the surface of the planet itself, because of the footwear we have on, right? I mean, right now I'm actually barefoot in the studio, but if I'm going outside, I tend to put on a pair of shoes, right? Like most people in modern society. But those shoes have a thick sole, and there's an insole, and there's material around my foot that's blocking a lot of the connectivity that I have with the planet. So this notion of grounding, making sure I'm grounded with the planet, and I'm getting some negative ions, which help my system restore. It helps to eliminate perhaps even some inflammation, helps to reset my nervous system. I think it's really important to be barefoot as much as possible in the presence of nature. You know, whether you're walking around in your grass or even if you're on the beach side, take the shoes off, get connected with the salinity of the air, the texture of the sand, really start to reconnect yourself to what it means to be a human being on this amazing planet that we have.
Very, very interesting again. Is this now like science? Are there like scientific researches done on being walking barefoot versus wearing shoes? Is this like proven now?
There is, And one caveat that I'll make, you know, as a research scientist, is that science doesn't necessarily prove anything. It makes those suggestions, right? It tries to support these ideas with evidence in, you know, these research realms and these domains. But I will say that there's a company that is out that's really leveraging the value of barefoot footwear, and it's called Vivo Barefoot, V-I-V-O Barefoot. And their idea is to make a shoe more minimal and have you get the best opportunity to reconnect with the planet, to make sure that your biomechanics are more optimal, you're more connected, you have less waste, so it's more sustainable. They're even building a compostable shoe right now. So they're going from scan to actually put on the foot and then back to the soil, which is a full chain of reduce, reuse, recycle. And it's just an amazing way of thinking about how we interface with our planet. You know, shoes, they end up in the landfill and they end up causing more problems than they do benefits. But companies like Vivo Footwear are actually pushing that norm, pushing that status quo. And it's exciting to see.
Cool. I'd like to talk now a little bit about stress in general and its impact on human performance. I don't know, stress is a big topic. And, you know, it probably warrants its own episode or even series of episodes. But, But what are some tools to manage stress for peak performance at work and in life in general?
Well, I'll start by saying stress is a good thing. You know, it's definitely a good thing. And without stress, we wouldn't be here, Ahmad. You and I physically would not be here. We have to stress the system in order to adapt. But stress, there has to be a balance. You know, it's like within resistance training. If I don't use enough resistance, I will never grow. I will never have hypertrophy or strength or endurance. But if I do too much, I could potentially injure myself. I could tear a muscle, pull a tendon, dislodge a joint, etc. Same thing with stress as a whole outside of an exercise context. You know, if I don't have some form of, quote, stress, then I will never adapt. I will never evolve. I will never get to the next level. It's like kind of like a video game, if you will. If you're in a video game scenario and the levels never get hard, then what's the point of the game? You're never going to want to be incentivized to learn and to grow and to push and challenge yourself. So I think stress, unfortunately, gets a bad rap. You know, it's just kind of chalked up as that's the last thing I want in my life is any sort of stress. Get away, no stress at all. That's not feasible. That's not practical, you know? And so it's really important to approach stress as another tool to use as a lever to elevate the situation. It's just a matter of how do we balance ourselves? How do we get away from burnout and this notion of the proverbial treadmill of just getting up, going to work, getting up, going to work, go to sleep, get up, go to work, eat, sleep, get it. And it just becomes repetitive versus, okay, I'm more aware of this situation right now. I'm experiencing some stress. What types of tools and techniques can I do to make sure that I'm approaching that stress as a way to build some adaptation in order to get stronger and in order to be more mentally tough, physically tough, emotionally tough, spiritually tough. So when I encounter that next form of stress, I have everything I need. I've already experienced this before, and I can move through this experience.
I see. So you see stress more of a challenge rather than a negative event, a challenge that has the potential to unlock or, like, let's say, allow human beings to grow and to become stronger. That's how we see it.
It's a lever. It's a tool, you know, and as long as your lever is long enough and you know exactly where to stand, you can move the world, you know, and it's a perspective that I think changes the way in which you approach situations. It's either you have a fixed mindset, oh, I don't want to be stressed and I don't want to do this and I don't want to do that, or hey, this is an opportunity for me to grow and to slingshot, whether that's in my career or in my experience or in my fitness, my wellness, whatever it may be. It could be anything that someone's experiencing. I can approach this with more intentionality, and that's a growth mindset. You don't have a fear of failure. You welcome failure as not an obstacle, but as an opportunity to really springboard ahead and launch yourself into that next level of the game, so to speak.
I see. All right. Well, that's very motivating, and thanks for sharing your perspective on stress. Now, going back to the introduction, so we discussed initially that you are a performance coach that is leveraging technology. So can we talk a little bit more about that? How does technology play a role in enhancing human performance? And if you can also share some examples, that would be really helpful.
Well, specifically, I leverage technology in the artificial intelligence realm. You know, it's a very new form of modern technology that, of course, is a buzzword. You know, it's kind of like clickbait situation that you'll see people, oh, anything that has AI or artificial intelligence next to it, I'm going to go and consume that information. So in a way, you know, it's a nice way to capture a conversation starter for people. They're asking me, like, how the heck did you get into this artificial intelligence space in conjunction with performance coaching? And to make a long story short, I interfaced with a platform that started back in 2023, right at the cusp of the release of something like a ChatGPT situation. And the geniuses at that platform, the co-founders and creators, were using people like myself, coaches in the performance, the health, the fitness, the, you know, wellness domain. And they were saying, okay, instead of just having coaches work with clients one-on-one on a 60-minute basis or a 75 or a 90-minute basis once or twice, maybe three times a week, we want to use technology, specifically artificial intelligence, to be in the pocket of individuals to work in conjunction or in parallel with those coaches. So the way it works, Ahmad, is it's called Vital AI, V-I-T-A-L-A-I, Vital AI. And the idea is you're able to put in any sort of prompt you want. So you type your prompt in. You could say something like, help me reduce stress before my podcast episode and conversation with Ahmad today. I'm a little maybe anxious, or I'm unsure, or whatever may be going on with that individual. You can select the coach's voice that you want. As I mentioned, I'm one of the featured artists, featured coaches and voices on the app itself. You can select whether you want to do a visualization exercise, which would be kind of cool before a podcast episode, obviously. You can also do body scan to kind of help you with maybe sleep. They have sleep stories as a selection point as well. You can do loving kindness. You can do breath awareness, concentration, mindfulness. There's all different forms of options for you. And then from there, you can select what type of background music you want. So you don't want like a nature scape, kind of what we talked about before, maybe some trickling water off of a waterfall or some birds chirping in a rainforest, maybe some crashing waves. And then you have more of like a melodic tone. And then there's a binarial tone. So left and right, isolation, and also silent. You know, if you don't want any background music at all, you can just make it silent. And then the really cool thing that I think is you can select the time that you want. You can do a 5 minute, 10 minute, 20 minute, all the way out to 60 minutes, even infinity. And then what I really think is neat is they're incorporating multilingual features to these sessions. So my voice, you can select English. You can also select French and Italian and German.
Using your voice?
Using my voice. It's pretty wild. Like, I can listen to myself run a session for me in Spanish.
Oh my God.
It's kind of cool, right? And so right now there's five languages total, and they're interested in adding more and more languages, including a language like Arabic.
That's
so it's
going to
be really cool how the speed at which technology is evolving, specifically artificial intelligence. So that's my, you know, 2-minute spiel on how I'm leveraging AI in my field of performance and health and wellness coaching.
Okay, that's impressive. So things, as you said, are evolving very fast indeed. And sorry, what was the name again of that app, or it's still being developed right now?
It is an app. It's in the Apple Store right now, so it's on iOS, and I believe they're currently working to get it on Android. It's called Vital AI, so V-I-T-A-L, like Vital AI, artificial intelligence, Vital AI. It's the world's first mindset coach driven by AI, and that's why I use that terminology as being the world's first performance coach powered by AI. So a really cool, really humbling opportunity. Super grateful for that. Big shout out to Vital AI for allowing me to be a featured artist and featured voice on the app.
Well, congratulations then, and I'll make sure to check it out.
Thank
sure.
you. I appreciate it.
Yeah. And I also encourage our listeners as well to have a look. I'd like to, like a small parenthesis, based on what we discussed today already, the name of a famous, let's call him self-help or performance enhancer as well, or performance, human performance optimization expert, mm-hmm. came to my mind. I don't know if you've heard about him. I'm sure you have. His name is Wim Hof.
Of course. Yep.
What do you think about his techniques, mainly those, like the two main ones, like the cold exposure practice that is now being practiced by many celebrities, including Joe Rogan and other athletes, and as well his breathing technique that is now taking, you know, internet by storm. Mm-hmm. What do you think about these things, and do you practice them yourself?
I mean, really what he's doing is what we talked about before, Ahmad. He's stressing the system, right? So he's allowing people to stress their bodies and their minds in a controlled way, right? Whether it's contrast therapy through cold therapy or hot therapy, and through specific respiration techniques to really challenge themselves to expand their lungs, expand their diaphragms, build up resiliency, have that growth mindset. So I'm all for his techniques. I think they're really great. I don't necessarily subscribe to it or prescribe any of his techniques. I have my own form of methodologies that I leverage through evidence-based experiences within my education and my expertise. But by no means do I knock or, you know, say, oh, you guys shouldn't be doing that. It's another form. It's another way of adapting through specific stressors. And I think he's got some pretty amazing work out there. So I would definitely encourage people to check him out.
Okay. Okay. That's great. I just wanted to know your opinion about him, and thanks for sharing that. Ford, now, how do you see the field of human performance optimization evolve in the next 5 to 10 years?
Yeah, I think, you know, with this recent push of artificial intelligence, that to me has got to be where it's headed next, you know. And I said, being at the start of something new, leveraging AI as a function and as a tool to push performance coaching into the next stratosphere, I see it just evolving from there. You know, right now Vital AI is, I'm going to plug in a prompt, but very soon it's going to be more of a conversation between, if you're on it, Ahmad, and you select my voice, now you're almost having this dialogue exchange of, hey, Ford, this is what I'm going on. You know, I'm going through this right now. Oh, hey, Ahmad, thanks for reaching out with this question. Now, this is all AI. This isn't necessarily me physically. It has my expertise, my knowledge, it has my experiences, it has my personality even baked into my avatar, essentially. But you're now working with somebody that has access to hundreds of years of knowledge, if not thousands of years of knowledge, that is now within the internet, right? So the internet is a global sphere of information, and it allows us to have access to it at our fingertips with a subject matter expert as the face, which would be like myself. And now you're having a conversation with me, and I'm challenging you to take these concepts, take these tools and techniques and modalities and incorporate them in your life to get you now to the next level. So that right there in and of itself, it enhances me as a coach because it gives me access to so many books and so many different modalities and so many different research articles that in a lifetime I couldn't process in my brain. But with artificial intelligence, it's a massive lever that you as the consumer, you as the client can gain access to. And I think as this continues to evolve and the more individuals that use technology like this, fast forward even 5 years from now, we would have a very different conversation. And that's what I'm most excited for. I don't ever want to be the person left at the train station. You know, if you speak to certain generations that still have a little bit of uneasy feeling using email in 2024, I'm like, oof, I don't ever want to be on that side of the coin. You know, I want it to be 2050 and say, I remember when this was X and then I saw it turn into Y and now it's Z. You know, I want to really see that innovation and that evolution of how we're leveraging technology in this specific space, but of course in other realms as well.
Very exciting future for the space then.
Ideally, for sure.
Ideally, yeah, with this intersection of tech and performance optimization. And my next question, and maybe we can end on that. What advice for it would you give to someone who wants to start improving their performance, but doesn't really know where to begin?
I would say to them, start slow and start small, you know, as simple as possible. And simple doesn't always mean easy. Something as simple as maybe each morning or each night, sit for a minute for 60 seconds and just do nothing, like literally do nothing. Don't try any specific technique or modality or read anything. Just be human for a second, you know, just sit, notice, maybe write something down about your experience and do that for, let's say, 60 days, 2 months. And then from there, you're going to have a lot of questions. And I think when you're armed with questions, it opens up a conversation and an opportunity to really challenge not only yourself, but others. And with that challenge, we can all grow, we can all evolve and become better versions of ourselves. You know, I think that's what we were really here to do, is to enjoy the experience, but also elevate, right? And make sure that we're optimizing this whole thing called the human experience.
Okay, excellent. And for those who are interested to know more or get in touch with you, can you please provide like a little bit of information about your website, how they can touch base with you?
Easiest way to get a hold of me is my website, forddyke.com. That's first name, last name.com, forddyke.com, as well as LinkedIn. I'm an active user on LinkedIn, thought leader, pushing content all the time, having virtual coffees with individuals, just kind of seeing what they're up to in their world, answering questions, consulting, working in collaborative spaces. This is what I do. This is why I'm here. And I'm always available, always interested in having a conversation with somebody.
Great. Well, thank you very much, Dr. Ford Dyke. And it was a pleasure to have this discussion with you on human performance optimization. I think that's going to be an evolving field and a lot of exciting innovation in the space. So looking forward to have another talk maybe sometimes in the future.
Sure. Yeah, that sounds great, Ahmad. Thank you so much for being a gracious host. I really enjoyed the conversation and look forward to another conversation down the line.
Likewise. Thank you very much for it.